thrown away for dead. Like, it would almost be embarrassing to share that stuff, right? And you're a leader? You're sharing the gospel and those things have happened to you? But he tells people. He opens wide his heart. So I ask you again, can you imagine a church where vulnerability is the norm? Being vulnerable means we have to be intentional. We actually have to choose to open our hearts. Now, to be honest, for some people it does come a little bit easier. They're just willing to tell you what's going on. But for most of us, we're pretty much in self-protective mode. So we tend to close things in. And so humbly, I'm going to offer you three little tips for designing safer churches using this verse from 2 Corinthians. And my first is, just be real. Just be real. Just be vulnerable. As Paul writes, just open your heart. Live authentically. Share the ups. Share the downs. Life isn't always joy, joy, joy. Happy, happy, happy. It's just not. So don't pretend that it is. Just be real. And when we do that, you know, that mask, we often talk about the mask. I've heard so many people talk about the mask. We come to church and what do? Happy Sabbath. Happy Sabbath. Nice shoes. Great dress. Did you get your hair done? Does your husband like it? No. Can't you just have a normal colour? Why do you have to put pink in your hair? I mean, do you really want to just go to church and say happy Sabbath and that's it? Is that all you want to do? You just want to keep everyone on a surface level, never deepening connection, just arm's length. I don't want anyone to see the mess underneath, so happy Sabbath. Just be real. I walked into church one day. I'd been yelling at my kids in the car. And I know a lot of parents do this, right? But the minute they walk in, let's go to Sabbath school. I walked in, get into Sabbath school. You, over there. The welcome is like, I go, what? Do you want me to pretend that I wasn't yelling at them in the car? Just be real. My second point is just be a non-anxious presence. This is my favourite sentence in the world. I did CPE a number of years ago and the lecturer, that was, I think, be a non-anxious presence. I tell you, it's hard. I tell you, it's really hard when your kids tell you stuff and you know, I don't want to know. But you just are a non-anxious, you just listen. Because if actually you become real and you open up your heart, people are going to recognise you as a safe person and they're going to come and tell you stuff. And when they share that stuff with you, when they share their pain, their suffering, their challenges, and sometimes they are going to make your hair curl or straighten if it's curly, right? So can you be a non-anxious presence? Can you just actually listen? Or as Paul says, can you not withhold your heart? Right? Because to withhold your heart would be to, you know, that barrier comes up like, whoa, that's a bit too much for me. Can you actually be a non-anxious presence? And the third thing, as people say those things, you're going to be trying to think, like most people, how to fix it, right? Oh, I know that Bible verse, or there's that story, or there's that motivational quote. Don't. Can you just sit in the discomfort? Can you sit in the space of actually not having an answer? Can you just listen? when someone tells you something awful, can you just go, I don't even have words. I can't even imagine what that must be like. Just sit and listen. When someone opens their heart to you in that way, sometimes the worst thing you can do is throw out an Ellen White quote, bang, a Bible verse, bang, motivational quote, bang, immediate shutdown. And if that person has actually been hurt spiritually and you want to use the Bible to encourage them, you're actually just adding to the trauma. So sometimes we just have to sit in the discomfort. And you know what? The scriptures actually confirm this. They don't say when someone comes to you with tears, you should immediately throw a Bible verse at them. It actually says, weep with those who weep. You don't actually have to offer solutions. You don't have to fix the problem. You don't have to have all the answers. You can just listen and hold space with that person. I want to give you one more Brené Brown quote. There's so much I could say, but if you just look, like I said, she is the master. I put this quote on my Instagram account a number of years ago because I just think it is one of the most powerful, powerful quotes I've ever read. This was in her book, Braving the Wilderness. Not enough of us know how to sit in pain with others. Worse, our discomfort shows up in ways that can hurt people and reinforce their own isolation. I've started to believe that crying with strangers in person would save the world. And I would say I have started to believe that crying with our church family in person would save the church. So what can we do to help design safer churches? Be real. Allow others to be real and don't judge them. And in the realness, don't feel like you have to fix the problem. Just be willing to pause in the real with others. This is how we design or begin the journey of designing safer churches, where vulnerability becomes normal, and in doing so, our communities, our churches, become places where love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity exist naturally. Our people, the church, can be a source of hope, empathy, accountability, and authenticity. This is the church I dream of. The safe place for my family and all of God's children. Thank you.
Thank you, Sylvia. And thank you for being the speaker at Women's Ministries Tent. We appreciate the union being so involved in our little conference here, our spicy conference here. Our next speaker is a parent. He's a university lecturer. He's a pretty good pastor. He's a TEDx speaker, maybe not quite the Brené Brown levels, but he's still pretty good. Thank you, Pastor Tim Gillespie.
Need the stand, but I need this situation. Thank you. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Just want to talk a little bit, and I know that we've not got a lot of time, but I want to talk about kind of our process of church revitalization, if we can. I got there in October 2014. We had about 85 people attending. There was no thought to user experience. It was in kind of desperate need of a new direction. They were unsure of their direction. It had been a young adult church. It had kind of grown past it. The founding pastor left, and then it kind of just fell apart, unfortunately. When I got there, I learned that there were 3 months of reserves left, so they were asking me whether or not we should shut down, which I hoped they wouldn't. And I spelled should wrong. Sorry about that. In the end of the day, we were in a bad place and we needed to get somewhere else. The first thing we had to decide is that survival is not a mission statement. And I think there's way too many churches who think, well, if we just make it one more year, really, we only have to make it till Jesus comes. We're not sure when that is. That means if we make it one more week, we're one step closer, right? So we're not really so concerned about thriving as much as we are just surviving. And that is not, first of all, it's not inspirational for anybody. It's not joyous. There's no hope there. You're just kind of plodding through to get to the next space, which is why we get really comfortable with good enough, right? We get comfortable with, well, that was all right. That's pretty good. That was okay. But I'm not sure that that's what we should be bringing to Christ in the midst of this. So we had to decide that since survival is not a mission statement, we need to figure out what our mission statement was. We had had a kind of historical mission statement and vision statement, which was learning to love well. I decided, you know what, that seems a little wordy to me. So we cut it off and we're just love well. This is our mission and vision statement. We put it on bumper stickers. We put it on hoodies. I guess you call them jumpers. We put them on everything we can so that people understand that we are a community that loves well, and it becomes really incredibly important for us to understand what loving well means. And so we started by really just simplifying, and we had to ask the question, what are we about? I think there's this misunderstanding that all Adventist churches are the same, right? We know that's not true because we've all been to different Adventist churches and we've chosen the one that we go to. So we know that not all Adventist churches are the same, but we often don't know what we're about. The overarching mission and theme of most of our churches is we're Adventist. So that's clear. We worship on Saturday. We have these statement of fundamental beliefs. We want you to understand some things. We do some health work, which is phenomenal. I'm not diminishing any of that work. However, since not all people are the same, not all churches should probably be the same. And that means, A, not all churches will appeal to everyone, and B, that's okay. It's okay to plant certain kinds of churches or be a certain kind of church for a certain kind of population. The first thing we had to decide is there enough here for us to do anything? Because another misunderstanding that I think happens within our Adventist world is that there's a limited amount of people that will go to our churches. If one church is doing well, that means it's going to suck all the resources from another church. And then that's not really fair. And so what we end up doing is we end up kind of killing each other so that no one can do well, because we're so afraid that if you take from my bucket will be empty. The problem is that's really unfaithful to what God has said. You know that, right? God says that, you know, I own the cattle on 1,000 hillsides. It seems like there's probably enough. And there's something like 7 billion people in the world. If there's people outside on the street while we're doing church, there's still work to be done. There's enough people to fill every single church that we have and for everyone to thrive. So you have to decide, we're going to live in the abundance of God. In my 25 years of ministry, I've never not had enough to do what God was calling us to do. I've often not had too much more, and it's not always shown up early, but I've always had enough to do what God is calling us to do. So I'm a firm believer in the abundance of God, that God will bring the people, the resources, the ideas, and the space to be able to do what God is calling us to do. Or else why would he call us to do it? He's not calling us to failure. He's calling us to the expansion of the kingdom. And so we went into a mode of growth really quickly, where we started to invest in the infrastructure of the church. We started to, and we knew what kind of church we were in some respects, but not completely. Growth, by the way, is phenomenal to have in church. Have you ever been part of a church that's really growing? Isn't that exciting? The only problem is this: growth without guidance is cancer. I mean, that's literally the definition of what cancer is, by and large. It's our genes that are moving in different directions. And so we had to decide, wait a second, we're growing really quickly, but we need to make sure that we're on point, we're on brand, and we're making sense of what we're doing. So we had to think using design thinking about what we wanted to be, but we had to clarify that. And so we had kind of just our value statements that just kind of showed up. We hadn't done really any work with them. And the first one was, of course, going to be Jesus. That was the most important thing. The second one was excellent always. And I know Chris spoke about that. And I was blown away that he said he gets criticism for excellence. Because why would we do anything for God in less than an excellent way? God is not a God of good enough. God is a God of amazing. And so we need to give everything that we do for him. From someone reading a text in in church to a children's story, which, by the way, I got issues with children's stories. But we can talk about that later. Maybe I need therapy. Right? The second one is momentum. We got to use this momentum that the Holy Spirit is giving us. If we're starting to move as a church, we need to be able to make those decisions and move quickly as a church for what God is calling us to do. And then the third one was experience. We needed to make sure that the people who walked in our church had an experience that was different than any other church. From the parking lot, to the lobby, through our coffee bar, into the church, it needed to be something that was really powerful and really meaningful to them. But we had to start thinking about everything that we were doing so that they could grab the experience of being in the presence of God. That was pretty important for us, right? The question was, we wanted our people to grow. We wanted them to bring people to, but they needed to know what they were bringing people to. So we went on about a 14-month journey of doing branding and identity work, which is something that, you know, every company has to do. Every retail company has to do. You wear Nike or you wear Adidas. You use an Apple computer or you use a PC because of the branding and the identity work. Branding and identity work says less about the product and a lot more about the person using the product and what they identify with. Because we've all had the discussions when somebody puts out an Android phone on the table and everybody else is using iPhones. We all know that conversation, right? There's a lot of shaming that goes on to that Android person. Right? Every once in a while, you'll be the only person with an iPhone in a group of Android people, and then you know you've just wandered into a bad part of town, in my opinion. All right? But it's because, listen, we identify with the things that we use. We identify, I drink Coke, I don't drink Pepsi, you know, I have Weet-Bix or the alternative, which I don't even know if there is an alternative to Weet-Bix. Just hey? Is that all it is? Just hey? Sorry. I know, but I need to be careful. That's like very important. So the first thing we had to ask is, who are they? Who are the people that we want to have come that we can really reach? That we can reach better than other churches, or maybe that other churches can't reach at all because of the way they are. Now, I know this is very small. I'm going to read it for you. This is after 14 months of working with a brand specialist to say who we are. And like, that was a fascinating journey because she would come in and we'd all sit together and she'd say, you know, what are you about? And we'd talk about it and this and that. Who are the people that you're trying to reach? We talk about it. And after about 3 months of this, she looked at me and she said, I'm gonna need you to leave the room. And I was like, I'm the lead pastor here. And she said, yeah, that's why I need you to leave the room. Because what's happening is your personality is having a tendency to overtake this brand. And the brand is not you. You're the voice right now, but you're not gonna always be the voice, number one. Number two, if this church is just your vision and just what you want, when you leave, this church falls apart. Is that what you want? No, that's not what I want. Then get out. And so I had to leave, and my staff did a lot of this work to make sure that the people that we were trying to reach just didn't look like me or wouldn't just resonate with me. So I'm gonna read this stuff to you relatively quickly, and we're gonna have to do more of this tomorrow as well, but I want you to understand the process that we went through to understand who we are and who we're trying to reach. So who are we talking to? What are their motivations? Crosswalk is speaking to the restless Christian, or SDA, who has become dissatisfied with or hurt by church as usual. They are still seekers and range from curious about Christ to devoted followers who simply haven't found him active or relevant in another church family. They tend to want to be challenged, even confronted with a new version of scriptural interpretation, and they feel compelled by a church that gives them a platform to act on their desire for inclusion, social justice, and community outreach. Those are the people that we're pretty good at reaching. The consumer I am statement, so what would the person say about themselves? I am or used to be a Christian, but I just haven't found a church that gets it. I want to be loved. I want to feel loved without having to change first. I want to doubt and question without being judged. I want to see Jesus active in today's context and culture. I want an experience that stands up to the ones I get from high quality secular brands. I want to know I'm giving to a church that gives back, and I want to learn and grow every week in and out of church. And you know what I found? There's a lot of these people out there. And this is what's funny. We did this before we started planting churches. Now we're planting churches, and I do a lot of church planting kind of stuff. I go to these conferences with church planters. I've never planted a church myself. I've just helped other people, like lay people, plant churches. So it's weird to go to church planting. But they're always like, oh, so you're not trying to reach the unchurched. And I'm like, I'm a pastor. I don't hang out with any unchurched. In fact, specifically, my job does not allow me to do that by and large. Because unchurched don't really hang out in places where pastors are. If you'd like me to go hang out in places where the unchurched are, you're probably going to wonder why I'm a pastor, right? That's this kind of catch 22. I said, but you understand that there is a vast, there's usually in almost any given town, there's more ex-Avenists than there are Avenists. You know that, the active Avenists. So we don't plant churches for those people. We don't plant churches that are going to reach those people. There's like this hierarchy in church planting that I've noticed, and I hope it's not true, but it kind of feels like it. Like if you're not going directly after the unchurched, I've had people say, I don't want any Avenists on my team when I plant a church. I'm like, who are you hanging out with? I hang out with Avenists. These are my communities. So this is the group that we're really pretty good. And we didn't know this at first. It turned out that we're a huge reclamation ministry of people walking back into church, right? People who've left church, not because they're angry, not because they're upset, but because church ceased to be relevant for them. It didn't make sense to them anymore. Sometimes they're hurt, but they haven't been in. They walk in and they look and the experience is so different when they walk in the lobby that they go, huh, this is interesting. Maybe I'll stay. And that's the community that we capture. You know what they bring once they become really comfortable in church? The unchurched, because they are the ones who've been hanging out with them since they've been outside of church. So we get there. We just don't get there first. Then, what does the audience think and feel, right? Most of our audience is in a final stand with their denomination and are willing to give it another shot if the local church can steer them clear of institutional and hypercultural Adventism. If they smell wafts of inauthenticity, denominational elitism, or any of what they came from, they may leave. They're hungry for authentic humility, real talk, a non-embarrassing brand experience, and a broader, deeper view of Jesus. So what do we want them to think and feel? This is the language we want them to use once they've come to Crosswalk. I don't know if I can put my finger on exactly which part it was, but that felt completely fresh and real. The people were super friendly, the coffee was amazing, the music made me emotional, and the sermon actually made me squirm a little, but in a really good way. I'll totally give them another chance, and if this keeps up, I may have found my place. That's what we want people to think and feel as they walk out of our church. And we, by the way, give this to every single volunteer. We have a branding guide that's 90-something pages long. Every volunteer gets a chance to understand what it is we're trying to do, what we want people to feel like, the language that we'd love them to be using, or something that that is equivocal to that. But we had to then ask the question, okay, this is what we're pretty good at reaching. I wonder, actually, what we do that sets us apart from other churches. And so we did this long bit of work here on brand structure. What are our product attributes? What do we bring to the table, right? What are the functional benefits? Community, depth, inspiration, sale. I know I'm going through this all very quickly. What are the emotional benefits? Belonging, acceptance, being part of a movement, overwhelmed by love, called, safe to doubt. Personality, what's our personality? It's real, it's creative, it's unafraid. And then what's our meaningful difference? And I'll read that in just a second. And so we figured out our positioning statement, which is our church exists especially for those seeking a different, more vibrant worship experience. Crosswalk Church is a Jesus-focused, intentional community of belonging and a spiritual launch pad where you're valued, challenged, and connected to your community and your God. Right? Most churches don't go through this kind of thing. And like I said, this took us 14 months to work through, to wordsmith, to figure out the language. We hired a company to come in and help us with this because we wanted to make sure that we had no questions about who we were, what it was we were doing, and where it was we were going, because we wanted to be effective for the kingdom. Because we know that just walking out and planting a flag and saying we're a church, you'll grab some people, but you're not really sure how you're going to meet their needs. We also know that there's people who walk in our church who go, oh, I don't like this. And we try and catch them in the lobby. And we're like, listen, if you don't like this, don't go in there. You're definitely not going to like it. Right? It's okay. You don't have to come to this church. Life's too short to be upset at your church all the time, right? Nobody's taking attendance. Like I've prayed people out of the lobby before. Like, where would you like to go? Let's pray that you'll find a church that you're not going to be angry at. Which I know sometimes people are like, well, we shouldn't do that. We should make a home for everybody. If you make a home for everybody, you make a home for no one. You understand that, right? Right? You have to know what you're about. I think it's really important. So what's our meaningful difference? Learning to love well through messages that challenge, worship that inspires, community that accepts all, advocating for the vulnerable, and a relevant, relentless pursuit of Jesus. This is where we landed. And I love this language. I think it's really, really beautiful. So we then had to clarify kind of our three core values, and belonging is absolutely our first one. We will be a community of belonging. The second one was momentum. It did kind of bubble to the top, and that's kind of how we were thinking before, being able to move and do the things that God has called us to do. And then lastly, experience, right? We needed to figure out how we could build a user experience that was really positive. Now that's my 20 minutes. So if you want to know more about what we were doing, you got to come back tomorrow if that's all right, because we talk about brand persona and we talk about where we went. And listen, let me just say this. Over the last 8 years that I've been at that church, we started with 85 people. And on Easter Sabbath, if you include our online community, along with all of our campuses, we were tracking 5,000 people that were engaged in this movement, that were with us. And when I say people online, our online statistics don't start with somebody going by on Facebook and watching for 12 seconds. It's a 20-minute engagement, or we don't count it. So these are not vanity statistics. People are really engaging, and our online community is really pretty vibrant and planting churches themselves. So again, I want to be clear on two things. This is a very design thinking process that we went through to do this, number one. And number two, Crosswalk is not the only way or the best way to do church. I know I get up here, I get really excited, and it sounds like I feel sometimes like I'm a little arrogant saying, look what we did. It's not that. We approached church differently because we wanted to experience church differently. And since we've done that, we've noticed that a lot of people not only appreciate it, but have found meaning, blessing, and most importantly, they found Christ again in their lives. And so that's really important. So anyway, I'm excited to talk to you more, but it's going to have to be tomorrow. Thank you, guys. At half speed? Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Yes, Tim will be back tomorrow. Please see if you can make it. We also will hear from my co-host, Aaliyah O'Hearn. She couldn't be here this morning, but she'll be back tomorrow and she'll be speaking with us. We also want to champion our children when we're designing church. And so tomorrow we have Pastor Colleen Savage, not Pastor, honorary title that we bandy around here. Colleen Savage will be talking about championing our children at church, and that's going to be fabulous. So please come along, 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. And just finally, shout out to Jesse and Evan, who've been doing visuals and sound. Can't do it without our teenagers. Church doesn't happen without your teens. If even Tim needed help with his slides this morning from a teenager. Thanks, everyone.